You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ecclesiastes. In today's message, Pastor Sandy will teach through the book of Ecclesiastes, chapters 7 through 9.
Verse 12, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, in other words, he thinks he's outwitting God, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him, but it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. His judgment will come. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. Oh, the wicked prosper, the righteous suffer. It's such a cause for irritation and frustration, and it adds to life's confusion, Solomon says. Solomon knows that there's going to be a heavenly, eternal judgment above the sun one day. But in the here and now, in the right now, this whole perplexity adds to life's frustration and to its meaninglessness. And this quandary is never better seen than in our judicial system. This gets real frustrating. Wicked men drag out their cases with endless appeals. They often walk away on a technicality. It's terrible. It just adds to the meaninglessness of life. Robert Frost defined a jury as follows: 12 persons chosen to decide who has the best lawyer. That's what it's come to today. And when we see this, it's just so frustrating. Verse 15, he says, so I commended enjoyment because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. Solomon has failed in his existentialist exercise. He's looked for some transcendent meaning to life under the sun, but he's come up empty. Life is so frustrating, he says, you might as well just enjoy whatever pleasure life may afford you. And so, go home tonight and eat a big bowl of ice cream. Forget about your diet. Who cares? Just eat some Breyers ice cream on your way home tonight. Go by the store and buy Breyers. Don't buy the cheap Kroger brand. Buy Breyers. Get the real thing, baby. Put it on your credit card. Who cares? Don't drink the cheap Maxwell House that you buy. Go out tonight and buy you a $5 cup of coffee. Go to Starbucks. I call it $5 because there's nothing there less than $5. But go out and drink a $5 cup of coffee. Enjoy your life, man. Enjoy it while you can, he says. For when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. He said, I searched 24/7 for some purpose in life. I stayed up day and night looking for answers, but I found none. Life is just a tangled knot. That's what he says. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Chapter 9. For I considered all this in my heart, so that I could declare it all, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. People know neither love nor hatred by anything they have seen before them. In other words, on the surface, life just doesn't make sense sometimes. 2 + 2 doesn't always equal 4. The dots don't always connect. Life can be a riddle. It can be a quandary, like a Rubik's Cube. Life can be an unsolvable puzzle. And you'll walk away from life sometimes just scratching your bald spot. You know, Moses concluded as much. He noted that there were truths impossible for man to comprehend. In Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, he says, the secret things belong to the Lord. There's some things that only God understands. A finite man will struggle to know an infinite God and all his wisdom. You know, Solomon's response to life's perplexity, catch this, is to accept it as is. He just takes life as is. He worked hard. And what came to him fairly and righteously, he enjoyed it to the fullest. But he left the problem of pain and suffering and all the other unanswerable questions, he just left it to God. Sometimes that's all we can do, is we take life for what it is. You know, it is what it is. How many times have you said that? And sometimes you just got to take life for what it is and take from it what God gives you and enjoy it and then leave the unanswered questions to God. That's the best way to cope. I like the famous prayer of Reinhold Niebuhr. He wrote this, "Oh God, give us serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can change, and wisdom to distinguish the difference." That's a great prayer. Well, in chapter 9, verse 2, Solomon brings up mankind's number one frustration. You see, the greatest problem with life is death. Man, death spoils everything. He says, all things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good, the clean, and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As in the good, so in is the sinner, he who takes an oath, as he who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. The atheist, the believer, the good guy, the bad guy, everybody, happens to everybody. Truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. Everybody is going to die. Nobody gets out of this life alive. We're all dead. We're dead men walking. That's what we are. Death is the great leveler. We don't like to think about it, but life has one common denominator, he says. We all are going to die. You know, the statistics on death are pretty impressive. One out of every one person dies. I like what Woody Allen used to say. It's not that I'm afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens. But he will be. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter what you've done. You're going to die. It's an appointment that we all must keep. History records Robert E. Lee's final words. They were these. Let the tent be struck. Every one of us will one day take down the tent. These physical bodies, they're just temporary. They're just tents. Under the sun, men share a common destiny, and that's death. It's above the sun. That's where the road forks. Understand this now. Under the sun, we all die. But above the sun, the road forks. One road leads to heaven, and the other road leads to hell. Puritan pastor Thomas Watson, he wrote these sobering words. He said, eternity to the godly is a day that has not sunset. Eternity to the wicked is a night that has no sunrise. How true. I like verse 4 here. But for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. There you have it. You know, in ancient Israel, dogs weren't pets. You didn't have dogs in Israel at that time. You know, dogs were like in Haiti, you know, today. Dogs are scavengers, man. They're not pets. They're on the level of a rat. They're dirty and they're mangy and they're despised. Whereas the lion is the king of beasts, the majestic animal. Nevertheless, he says, a living mutt is better than a dead lion king. As long as you're alive, no matter who you are, there's hope. There's potential to repent. And yet, the moment you die, you forfeit any possibility for change for all eternity. Death should be the most ominous thing that you face because it means the forfeiting of change. That's what death is. It seals your state forever. That's why death is such a big deal. Die without Jesus and you'll live without Jesus forever. Die with Jesus and you'll live forever with Jesus. This is why death is such an important thing. And preparing for death is the most important element to living, to life. Here he's saying, though, in a sense, it's better to be a living dog than a dead lion. At least you still have the possibility for change. He says, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also, their love, their hatred, and their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. In other words, too many people live as if they're going to live forever. Don't be foolish. Nobody is guaranteed their next breath. Your opportunity to live, to love, to hate, to show envy, to be a living person and all that that means, it's temporary. You can only experience this life right now for a short time. If there's a statement you need to make it today. Because once you're dead, those chances are over. Case closed. Your file is put in a box and put in a shelf somewhere. It's over for you. If there's something you need to do for God, do it today. If there's something you need to do for someone else, do it today. If there's something you need to do for yourself, do it today. Eat that bowl of ice cream tonight. Tomorrow, it may be too late. That's what he's saying to us. And here in the middle of chapter 9, the preacher draws some important conclusions. He says that in light of death's inevitability, here are four suggestions for how you should live your life. Here they are. First, verse 7. Since death is inevitable for all of us, enjoy life. Enjoy life. He says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your works. Life is too short to worry or to sulk. So friend, while you got life, reach for the stars, would you? Stop and smell the roses. Put some gravy on your potatoes. Enjoy the one and only life you've been given. Take the blessings of God and enjoy them to the fullest. For the only time to savor earth's joys is while you're on earth. Now here's second suggestion, verse 8. Make sure you're right with God. He says, let your garments always be white and let your head lack no oil. White is a symbol of righteousness. Oil is an idiom for the Holy Spirit. The whole point of life here below is to get to know God and to prepare yourself for the life above. Makes no sense to live in God's world without God. While you have the chance, get to know God. Third suggestion he makes in light of the inevitability of death, verse 9, love your spouse. Love your spouse. He says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Life is too short to waste it fussing and fighting with the person you love. Get over yourself, man, and learn to love. Learn to love another person, not just yourself, okay? It reminds me of Barry and Harry. They're having a conversation one day, and Barry says to Harry, he says, I heard you had an argument with your wife. And Harry says, yeah, she came crawling to me on her knees. He says, no kidding. What did she say? Harry replies, she said, well, get out from under that bed and fight like a man. Did you see the tombstone? It said, to my beloved husband, Walter, may he rest in peace until we meet again. Hey, as a Christian, you are committed to your spouse until death do us part. Has anybody forgotten that? Anybody forget that little clause? Until death do you part. That means you're stuck, man. You know, we can dress that up the best we can. We can put a happy face on that. But that means you're stuck. Now, some of you are happy to be stuck, but you're stuck nonetheless. Apart from adultery or desertion, there is no biblical, God-pleasing way out of your marriage. So, why don't you work at it? Why don't you try to make it a good marriage? Why don't you make the best of it? If you can't be with the one you love, honey, love the one you're with. That's sort of true. Don't know quite how biblical that is, but that's sort of true. But learn to love your spouse. You're stuck with them. You might as well love them. You know, there is a way out of a bad marriage, and that's to learn to love your spouse. Turn it into a good marriage, would you? You can do it. You know, Kathy and I, we've had a few fights that the neighbors heard. We have. I mean, I know some of you think that living with Pastor Sandy is just such an easy thing, and Pastor Sandy's such a godly man and loves the Lord, and speaks God's truth every Sunday. You know, living with him must be a dream come true. I know you think that. But Kathy will tell you the brutal truth. But you know, I'm so thankful for a woman who's worked at it, man, who didn't just abandon me the first time things got tough, but who stuck with me even when I was a jerk, and who loves me to this day when I'm a jerk, and who tolerates my idiosyncrasies and my peculiarities, and who works with me. I'm thankful for a woman who loves me that way and who's been willing to stick with me for 29 years now. And I even get hints that she's signed up for some more year. She's actually going to do this again for another year. I'm so excited about that. You know, I've heard it said, often the difference between a successful marriage and a mediocre marriage consists of leaving about 3 or 4 things a day unsaid. Do you understand how little it might take to improve your marriage? Some of you think that you got these huge problems, but you know, if you just started with a few practical things that you did every day for your spouse, it might blow your mind how easy it would be to get this marriage turned around and get it headed in the right direction. You know, living in marital harmony involves learning to control our tongue, avoiding sarcasm and harsh words, being kind, being considerate to each other. Life is too short, Solomon says, to spar and to trade barbs with your spouse. A woman once said, some pray to marry the man they love. My prayer will somewhat vary. I pray to God above that I love the man I marry. Well, the fourth suggestion Solomon has for us, because of the brevity of life, verse 10, if there's something worth doing, give it your best. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. Once you're dead and gone, there are no comebacks, man. There are no second chances. Thus, life is too short for half-hearted efforts. If there's a cause worth believing, if there is a job worth doing, if there is a deed worth undertaking, if there is a game worth playing, then give it all you've got. Give it your best shot. That's the way to live life. Solomon mentions another frustration at the end of chapter 9, verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. In other words, life doesn't always reward the most talented or the hardest worker. And this is frustrating. You know, at times, success is just a matter of being at the right place at the right time. I mean, Solomon is saying that chance and coincidence make as much money as hard work and education. And this is a great frustration, especially if you're a hard worker and you've spent a lot of time and money getting an education. Solomon is grieved over the less talented person who just stumbles across success, the same success that eludes the guy who labors long and sacrifices greatly. Reminds me of the man who explained how he had accumulated his vast fortune. He says, well, I bought an apple for a nickel. And then I turned around and I sold it for a dime. And then I took that dime and I bought 2 apples. And I sold them for 20 cents. And then I bought 4 apples. And someone asked, you made millions of dollars selling apples? The man said, oh no, I married the daughter of the rich man who had all the apples. Well, you know, we love success stories. The guy who pulled himself up by his bootstraps through work and industriousness and hard effort. But there's always more to the story. There always is. Usually, he had some advantage that the people around him lacked. Solomon is saying, this is a real frustration. Shouldn't work that way. Solomon adds in verse 12, the opposite, he says. For man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared at an evil time when it falls upon them suddenly. In other words, other men prepare themselves for life only to get snatched up by circumstances they can't control. You know, like a little bird, it starts its day thinking it's a wonderful day today. Tweet, 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 tweet. Bam! Gets the clamps just snatched right over it. Snuffs a little life out of it, you know. Just tweeting around, thinking that all day, and then bam! Dead bird. Life is like that, man. Like the fish who goes to school. He's doing swimmingly well. First in his class. There's nothing fishy about his future. He's going to succeed. Until one day he bites down on a little worm and all of a sudden, man, he's gone. Where'd he go? He's on somebody's plate getting eaten up. He doesn't exist anymore by the end of the day. He's somebody's burp. This is life. And it can happen to you. That's what he's saying here. You know, you plan your life. You got all these things that you want to do and all these things that are going to accomplish. And all of a sudden, man, things can happen that are outside of your control. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's all vanity, he says. Verse 13 tells a parable. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. And here's another of life's frustrations. Life is pretty frustrating, isn't it? Here's another one. The person who deserves recognition is the person who gets overlooked or slighted. You know, this man, because of his wisdom, he saves the whole city, but nobody ever remembers him. Have you ever come across a situation where someone had a great idea only to have the boss take credit for it? Yeah, you have. These are the kinds of experiences that can really sour you on life, can't they? It had Solomon. Verse 18, wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Here's another frustration. One bad apple can sure spoil the whole bunch. Adam's sin brought ruin on the whole human race. Achan's disobedience caused the defeat of an entire nation. Paul warns the Corinthians that a little yeast can leaven the whole lump. One guy jumps off sides and the whole bulldog front line gets penalized. One person makes a mistake and it can ruin it for everyone else. Solomon says this isn't fair. It doesn't seem right. It just adds to life's disappointment. I wouldn't be surprised if right there on the back of Solomon's chariot, he had this bumper sticker that read, life stinks. Life is a dream buster. Life is the source of great disillusionment and tremendous frustration. This is why there is only one place where life's irritations are not felt. There is only one place where life's cruelties fade away and where all of life's wrongs are made right. And it's not under the sun. It's above the sun. Only in Christ Jesus do we find real fulfillment. Only when we set our minds above rather than here below do we find real joy.
From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights, and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.